I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, exclusive findings. New poll numbers from EWTN and Real Clear Opinion Research looks into the Catholic vote and the Catholic identity headed into the 2024 election. Get out of jail. The U.S. secures the release of more than 100 people being detained by the Ortega regime in Nicaragua. Tis the season? The socialist leader of Venezuela makes a surprising announcement about Christmas, how faith leaders are responding. And on the road again, the Holy Father wraps up his historic trip to Indonesia. We'll tell you where he's headed next. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Teresa of Calcutta. Our top story tonight, we are exactly 2 months until Election Day and just 5 days away from what no doubt will be a widely watched presidential debate. To prepare for it, Vice President Harris flew to Pennsylvania today while former President Trump was in the Empire State addressing the Economic Club of New York. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, in New York, former President Donald Trump said he wants to eliminate fraud in government, and Elon Musk would help lead those efforts. All this as the post-Labor Day race for the White House really heats up.
As President Joe Biden left the White House flying off to western Wisconsin, and Vice President Kamala Harris traveled to Pennsylvania to get ready to go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump, the former president delivered remarks at the Economic Club of New York, promising, if elected, to blast through every bureaucratic hurdle.
To issue rapid approvals for new drilling, new pipelines, new refineries, new power plants, new electric plants, and reactors of all types. Prices will fall immediately in anticipation.
And when it comes to taxes, Trump warned Harris wants to get rid of what he got passed.
Her tax plan, which includes the promise to end the Trump tax cuts, which again by itself would be a massive tax increase, would increase taxes by over $5 trillion.
Ian Sams, senior national spokesperson for the Harris-Walz campaign, also talked taxes.
And when it comes to capital gains and the tax code, I think that she understands that we can make sure that those at the top, the billionaires and the wealthy, pay their fair share with a billionaire minimum tax, with raising the corporate tax rate, with quadrupling taxes on stock buybacks, things that really make sure that those at the top are paying their fair share.
Then on Tuesday, the big debate will take place at Philadelphia's National Constitution Center.
The Constitution Center was viewed as a perfect place to have this debate, the perfect backdrop in Philadelphia, where our country was founded.
And the rules? No live audience, no opening statements, no props, and microphones muted when their opponent is talking. Meanwhile, back in battleground Wisconsin, President Biden promoting his Investing in America agenda. The White House says he'll announce $7.3 billion for clean, affordable, reliable electricity for rural America, funded by his Inflation Reduction Act, adding, the investment announced today is the largest investment in rural electrification since the New Deal.
Also tonight, Trump's attorneys were back in court in his federal election interference case, the first hearing in nearly a year, arguing over next steps in the case. And separately, Hunter Biden's federal tax case, now he wants to change his not guilty plea. This as jury selection was about to begin. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. The U.S. government says it has secured the release of 135 political prisoners in Nicaragua. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said in a statement that they were released on humanitarian grounds, adding, quote, no one should be put in jail for peacefully exercising their fundamental rights of freedom of expression, association, and practicing their religion. Those who are set to be free include Catholic lay people and 13 members of a Texas-based religious charity. And here with reaction to the latest news out of Nicaragua is Congressman Robert Aderholt, a Republican from Alabama's 4th District. Congressman, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. I know you've been quite vocal about the situation in Nicaragua under the Ortega regime. What was your reaction to the news today?
Well, it was like a bolt out of the blue. It was just great to hear this. They got the news this morning. I got word from my office that the State Department had reached out to us to let us know that this was very close to happening. And it was just, I woke up this morning right before I actually made coffee. So it started to be a great day, and very thankful that this has all turned out the way it has, and a lot of prayers have been answered, no doubt.
Yeah, and I know you have a close relationship with Brett Hancock, the founder of Mountain Gateway Church. Have you talked to him yet? And what has he said about the release?
Well, he was the first person I called after I got the news. I felt like he has been in contact with the State Department as well during these negotiations. And so I felt like he had probably also gotten the news, but I just wanted to confirm that he had heard the news, and he had as well, but nothing was public at this point. So we were basically sharing what we knew with each other from the State Department, but we didn't, not until anything was public could we really get real excited about it, but we felt good about it, and it was just a great way to start the morning.
Yeah, and I know this prison release, it didn't happen overnight. The negotiations were months in the making, and I understand that Nicaragua didn't get anything in return from the U.S. for the prisoner's release. So why do you think the Ortega regime agreed to it?
Well, I think this just really was sent a bad message that because, you know, get back to what happened here. And I think most of your listeners probably know, but this goes back into the last part of last year around December when they were having some evangelical campaigns, meetings. Some of the churches came together, had some outdoor meetings, and people were just simply worshiping and coming together. And when I think the State Department and when members of Congress like myself, and let me just say that this was a team effort by so many members of Congress. Barry Moore, who is my colleague down in the southern part of the state, he was very supportive of this. Our senators were very supportive of this. And we came together and just called attention to it. And I think it was an embarrassment to the Nicaraguan government. And I think when they saw what was happening and really that the outrageous and egregious nature of putting people into prison simply because of them exercising their faith, I think they said, we better, let these people go. They've not really done anything wrong. We don't have anything to charge them with. And we saw the results, what we saw today.
Yeah, almost out of time, but I do want to mention this, that some Catholic lay people, as you mentioned, were also released today. But other clergy do remain detained or exiled. Congressman, what more do you think the U.S. should be doing in this instance?
Well, we just got my understanding, these particular prisoners that were being held, and again, it was more than just pastors, you're correct. And there was some Christians that were involved there as well that they were held. And so they are being processed in Guatemala, and I think they're being all gathered there together. And then they will be, hopefully, the Americans or those that can be given aid here by the United States. But obviously, these were people I had worked with, Brett Hancock and his wife, as you mentioned earlier, and they have been on this from the very beginning. I met him at the National Prayer Breakfast, actually back in February, and this is how this all started between us. So it's actually truly an answered prayer, because it was at the prayer breakfast that he shared this information with me back in February. And here we are in September, and we're just thankful that our prayers were answered, and these men and women are going to be freed, and they're going to be reunited with their families.
Absolutely. Congressman Adderholt of Alabama, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless.
Well, Venezuela's leader declares that the start of the Christmas season is moving to October 1st, and church leaders issued a quick response. Nicolas Maduro says that he made a move in, quote, homage and gratitude to the people in the South American country following his apparent victory in a hotly contested election in July. Earlier this week, the socialist government issued an arrest warrant for the opposition candidate. Supporters believe Edmundo Gonzalez won the election by a wide margin. Well, Venezuela's Catholic bishops denounce the October 1st start to Christmas. They say that the Christian holy day, quote, should not be used for propaganda or particular political purposes. And now to Ukraine, where the country's parliament has approved the appointment of a new foreign minister. Andre Sabiha will step into the role, which was vacated earlier this week. The 49-year-old was a former ambassador to Turkey and served as a deputy under the previous foreign minister. It is part of a push from Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky to replace nearly a dozen top officials. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including the numbers are in. New exclusive polling from EWTN and Real Clear Opinion Research on the Catholic identity and the 2024 election. And the federal agency in charge of disaster relief is running low on money. We have reaction from Capitol Hill. As the election season heats up, we have exclusive new polling conducted by EWTN and Real Clear Opinion Research. It takes a deep dive into the attitudes of the faithful on wide-ranging issues from candidate choices to the Catholic identity. Some of the results found that among those who consider themselves Catholic, 43% attend Mass at least once a week and 52% believe in the real presence of the Eucharist. Other findings reveal that at least 16% of Catholics go to confession and 39% of Catholic voters say they generally accept most of the Church's teachings. EWTN's own Dr. Matthew Bunsen had this to say about Mass attendance.
Catholics attend Mass in many of the same ways that they have over the last years. One of our findings is that about a third of Catholics attend Mass at least once a week. When you factor in those Catholics who attend Mass on more than once a week or daily, that number moves up to about 43%. But then we have another third of Catholics who attend Mass pretty much a few times a year. So we're pretty much all over the map in terms of where Catholics are attending Mass. But significantly, we do have a pretty sizable number who go to Mass at least once a week. So that's a promising sign.
All right, to help us take a deeper dive into the numbers, let's bring in Father Aquinas Gilbo, University Chaplain and Vice President of Ministry and Mission at the Catholic University of America, and Dan Salucci, the CEO of the Catholic Leadership Institute. Welcome to you both, gentlemen. Dan, I want to start with you and a look at what the EWTN Real Clear polling found when it came to Mass attendance. The survey found that adults 18 to 39 attended Mass more regularly than older generations. Your reaction to those findings, and do you feel that it is reflective overall of the Catholic population?
Yeah, I think that for those in the age group that you mentioned that are attending Mass, Tracy, I do think that that is what we're seeing in larger trends, because it's more of a conscious choice for those generations that are choosing to attend Mass at this point. I'm not sure it reflects the larger Catholic population. We have to remember that there's about 77 million baptized Catholics in the country, and we know that only about 17 to 20% are attending Mass every week or more. So I'm not sure how reflective it is of the larger population, but I think certainly for those who are in that younger demographic and making that choice, I think you're seeing a much more conscious Catholicism.
Yeah, and Father Aquinas, I know you work with young adults at the Catholic University of America, most of whom no doubt attend Mass regularly. Do you think there's a correlation between how often one goes to Mass or confession and their political beliefs or leanings?
That's certainly the impression that I think that we receive, certainly through news media or other outlets. They do think that either religious belief or religious practice is a predictor of leaning right or left or in voting patterns. I think one of the interesting things that your poll shows is that at least those that responded to the poll, the split is right down the middle, that those attending Mass regularly, and in fact, among those who attend Mass most regularly, the split between right and left is almost even. So I that was one of the more interesting things I found in the poll.
Yeah, and when it comes to church teaching, 39% of Catholics polled say that they generally accept most of the church's teachings and try to live their lives accordingly, compared to 14% that say Catholicism has only a minor influence on their lives. Dan, this one is for you. How do you think acceptance of church teaching influences the way people view candidates and ultimately the way they vote, if at all?
Yeah, I think to harken back to Father's point, I don't think we're seeing a big connection there, unfortunately. I think we're seeing, relative to the issues that are most important to people, according to the polling data, that really it's the economy first. And I think some of those teachings that were asked about were not really even a close second. So I think people are really voting for their reality more than church teaching. And I think that's emblematic of how central it is or not central it is to their lives right now.
Yeah, with some other key findings that we found from this poll, about 52% of Catholics believe in the real presence, while 32% do not believe. Father Aquinas, your thoughts on that, and why do you think that a significant portion of Catholics don't believe in the real presence? Where's the disconnect here?
Well, on the one hand, those numbers are better than we saw from the Gallup poll a few years ago, that poll that really shocked everyone, including the bishops, and lit a fire under them in terms of launching this Eucharistic revival that we're in, the fruit of which was the National Eucharistic Congress that we just celebrated this past summer. So on the one hand, the numbers can seem encouraging, but, you know, half of the Catholic population stating that they don't believe what the Lord himself reveals about the Eucharist or what the Church teaches, how she celebrates the mystery of the Eucharist. That's concerning. It shows that we priests and preachers have a lot more work to do. John 6, you know, when the Bread of Life discourse, you know, John the Evangelist ends that passage by saying that many people left the Lord that day, just that the teaching of the Eucharist is hard. So it is something that we have to continually preach, continually encourage belief in, and it's something that the faithful should pray for the grace every day to go deeper into the belief in the Eucharist and also through their friendships and in their families, encourage. And really encourage and support each other in belief in the real presence.
Father Aquinas, I'm going to stay with you here for a moment. What advice would you give Catholics regarding the election, and what should we keep in mind as we head to the polls?
I would say that every voter who walks into the booth is voting not only for their own personal interest, although that's obviously going to be on their minds, but the act of voting is a kind of mysterious thing where we're asked to state a selection or a preference not just for ourselves but for the whole nation. We're really making a choice for the common good and the good of the nation as a whole, and that should be at the forefront of everyone's mind that they go into the poll. So it's not looking at what I need in my own house or in my own community, although those are very important. But what does the country need at this moment? What does the nation need at this moment? And then that's what should inform how it is that we pull the lever on Election Day.
Dan, before I wrap up, I'm going to give you the final word. Your big takeaway from this polling.
Yeah, my big takeaway from the polling data was I think we're really starting to see the evolution of Catholicism as more of a cultural reality and the implications of really now two generations without perhaps the strongest domestic teachers at home. And so we have to remember that as now Gen X starts to have grandchildren, if you can believe it, we might have children who have grown up not rejecting teachings of the church, but actually not having had an experience of it in the first place. And so that can sound sad at first, but I think it's a great opportunity for us to repropose the gospel and to not take anything for granted, because I think we have a lot of people who have grown up in a culturally Catholic context, but haven't necessarily even heard the teachings yet to reject them. So I think keeping that in mind and making sure that we never stop reproposing the beauty of our tradition and teaching and the gospel message that Christ gives us.
Well, thank you both so much for weighing in and for your insights. We really appreciate it. God bless you both.
Thank you.
Federal money for recovery from natural disasters is running low, and Congress must act soon when they return to Washington next week. The issue is front and center for those still recovering from the deadly wildfire in Hawaii last August. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has more on that. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. You may recall that fire pretty much wiped out Lahaina, the capital of Maui, killing over 100 people and causing billions in property damage. Federal disaster aid from FEMA helps communities rebuild and provides temporary assistance like emergency housing. U.S. House lawmakers held a hearing in Lahaina to get an update on whether the $3 billion that FEMA has provided was spent efficiently.
The United States needs to center affordable housing in its disaster response. I think this was a lesson from Katrina as well. I think what we've happened here is showing we are still struggling to understand how to provide housing in the wake of disasters.
One thing FEMA does is provide temporary housing for up to 18 months, and time is running out for the more than 12,000 people who were displaced. FEMA's regional director says a quick solution is not on the horizon.
Now you're talking over $1 million-something per house to rebuild out here, which would not make it feasible based on the authorities that I have right now to do that. Our authority really focuses on, you know, temporary solutions.
Families remain in temporary housing and face mounting costs from mortgage payments that will be owed once forbearance expires. Survivors struggle with financial instability, child care and health care needs, and increasing mental health concerns.
Residents say they want to rebuild, but need more help.
Lahaina is not just a place. It's a cherished, sacred part of Hawaii's identity. And as we move forward, we are committed here to ensuring that it shines brightly again.
But FEMA needs more money to keep providing services. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy knows firsthand about natural disasters. Louisiana is still recovering from the damage caused by Hurricane Katrina. But he also believes FEMA's housing dollars could be combined with community grants for a better outcome.
Instead of spending a lot of money for temporary housing, which is temporary, we could combine those dollars with other dollars to help come up with long-term affordable housing solutions.
Senator Cassidy thinks more FEMA aid will be tied to a bigger spending bill to get it across the finish line sooner. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the next stop, details about the Holy Father's last day in Indonesia and his next destination. Francis's third and last day in Indonesia before departing for the second leg of his journey in Southeast Asia. Catholic news agency Rome correspondent Courtney Morez gives us a closer look at the Holy Father's eventful visit.
Despite an overnight 13-hour flight and a packed schedule, the Pope has appeared full of energy during these first few days here in Jakarta. In his meeting with local Catholics at the cathedral yesterday, Pope Francis joked with the many religious sisters who came to greet him and encouraged them in their ministry, saying, "Let the many islands rejoice, bear witness to the joy of the resurrection." Interreligious dialogue has been an important theme of the first leg of the trip, as Indonesia is home to the largest Muslim population in the world. The country's roughly 242 million Muslims make up more than 12% of the global Muslim population. Today, Pope Francis visited the grounds of the largest mosque in Southeast Asia, where he signed a joint declaration condemning religious-based violence at an interfaith meeting with the Grand Imam of the mosque. The declaration, titled "Fostering Religious Harmony for the Sake of Humanity," calls for religious leaders to work together to promote human dignity, interreligious dialogue, and environmental protection. This afternoon, Pope Francis presided over a stadium mass in Jakarta.
In the midst of the confusion and vanity of human words, there is need for the Word of God, the only true compass for our journey, which alone is capable of leading us back to the true meaning of life amid so much woundedness and confusion.
While Catholics are a small minority in the country, representing only 3% of the population, Indonesia is still home to more than 29 million Christians. Many of the local Catholics I've spoken to here in Indonesia have described their local church as vibrant, with packed churches on Sundays. One Catholic told me that he personally knows many Indonesians who have converted from Islam to Catholicism, including his own father. He told me that he uses the Muslim call to prayer as a daily reminder to pray the Angelus. Tomorrow, we will travel to Papua New Guinea, where Pope Francis will meet with local missionaries who serve the poor in some of the most remote parts of the country. After that, we will travel to East Timor and Singapore. In Jakarta, Courtney Mares, EWTN News.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.